Hello and welcome to MGO Podcast 1.10. Can you do 1.10?
Yeah, I don't think we understand decimals as well.
No, that's,
as maybe
that
we
is the way versioning works, though.
Yes.
All right, so that's let's talk about that instead of the Penn State game, right?
Yeah, it's probably a much more, less soul-crushing discussion
yes.
for the Michigan fan.
So, yes, we do talk about the Penn State game with Tim, and then we talk about the Big Ten and the Illinois game with Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. We do not have an Illinois blogger on the podcast because we couldn't really find one who I thought was worth talking to. Also, you will get to hear the spit take of all spit takes sometime during Jamie Mack's thing for no reason whatsoever. I just thought I was going to choke up some soda. So, enjoy. That's my favorite part of this week's podcast. This weekend, I had a buddy who had tickets to the game that he wasn't going to use, and I gave them to Tim and Paul, and I would just like to use this opportunity to apologize profusely to Tim and Paul for doing that to them.
It was not the best Michigan football experience of my life. But
well, I felt so terrible after, like, you guys came up and, like, before the Notre Dame game, and you said that you weren't actually going to the game.
Yeah.
And I felt even worse afterwards, so I was like, this is not going to happen. This is not going to happen on my watch. And then that didn't go so well.
Yeah. It didn't turn out quite the same as the Notre Dame game.
I'm just making it worse. Yeah. Like,
you're basically just rubbing it in my face.
Yeah.
Right now.
So I feel like I can't get you Ohio State tickets.
Yeah.
Because if we don't, then we win. And now I'm sounding like one of my readers who thinks live blogs are the currency. So it
will be the first Ohio State game in, I think, 7 years that I haven't been to, though.
Well, I'm actually still looking for tickets, but we'll see. Anyway, 35-10, Penn State over Michigan, not fluky in any way whatsoever. They killed Michigan basically wholeheartedly, and then Michigan, for good measure, you know, threw in four turnovers, a host of drop passes, and a comically bad but still called roughing the punter penalty that sort of removed any chance that the score at the end would be even respectable. It was kind of a come down, and this gets published on Thursday, but we do record it on Sunday, so I'm going to speak in the future tense of something that has already happened for you. I'm going to write my my Monday column, and it's basically just going to be the verdict is in, and the verdict is that this is a crappy football team.
And I think we kind of already knew that. Like, the Notre Dame game might have, like, given us false hope, but we're like, okay, this is a mediocre to hopefully good. We don't know yet. And hopefully they can steal a win or two, and that will be – it'll make it look like Michigan was good this year. And
yeah, that's
not going to happen.
That has always been the suspicion. I think after the Notre Dame game and then the Eastern game, we thought maybe this wasn't actually a good team. And then Michigan State was sort of a wake-up call, and Iowa was – you know, actually, I came out of the Iowa game.
Yeah, I was, I think, a net positive.
Yeah, feeling pretty good that if they hadn't have had the five turnovers, they probably would have won that game. And then, you know, Delaware State's a non-entity. But then Penn State – I mean, that's where the hammer comes down. And now they've played five games against teams from BCS conferences, and they have been outgained in all of them, substantially in many of them. And that's just not something that's sustainable if you want to be a good team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. Like, I think before the season, everybody was saying this is probably going to be a 7-5 team. And built into that assumption was the fact that Rodriguez was a pretty good coach. And so if Michigan does go 7-5, probably picks up a bowl game and hopefully wins it, then you can say that this season was, you know, not great, but they're moving in the right direction, and the season has been a success.
Yeah, it's definitely a positive delta to go from 3-9 to 7-5. So
right.
I think it doesn't even require another upset to get to 7-5. It'll probably be a disappointment if Michigan doesn't get to 7-5, because that would require losing to Illinois or Purdue, which would be very bad.
Yeah, well, Purdue's looking like a losable game at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, with Michigan's defense, they could blow some stuff against Illinois, but Illinois has been so terrible, which I'm sure.
And I still, even coming into last weekend, I was like, oh yeah, I feel the upset over Penn State, but a come down game against Illinois. And now if there's a come down game against Illinois after actually losing to Penn State, I think I might just start weeping.
All right, that's quite a difference from the post Notre Dame podcast. Yeah. We basically were giggling at each other the whole time. I guess we should talk about the game itself. Like, I honestly didn't think that 4CA played too badly.
Mm-mm.
I thought, you know, both quarterbacks got screwed over by their receivers dropping a ton of catchable balls.
Yeah. If there weren't a number of drops as there were, like probably three or four by Koger, a couple by Webb, one by Kelvin Grady, that was pretty serious.
Yeah.
Without those, the quarterback stats look good. They might have been able to change momentum. I don't think that it necessarily makes Michigan win the game, but it certainly keeps it a lot closer and maybe keeps it winnable into the second half at least.
The second Koger drop on a seam, or was it the first one? I think it was the first one where Denard Robinson threw it and hit him. I mean, it was kind of a tough catch. It's probably a borderline 2 versus 3. I'll make it a 2 because it was rainy out. But, I mean, that's really a catch that you'd expect Koger to make given all the stuff that he's done so far.
Yeah, especially considering he's caught the ones with regularity this year.
Yeah, and that was like a 30-yard play. And then on the very next play, Robinson throws a terrible interception. And it's just like
it kind of brings back to mind against, I believe it was Eastern, the Martavius Odoms drop, immediately followed by a horrible Robinson interception as well. He just doesn't deal with drop passes well, maybe.
I think that you want to get Denard Robinson in the game, but this whole thing where Robinson gets one drive and then 4CA gets another drive is I disagree with that.
I have been kind of in the Denard Robinson deserves to play camp, but at this time, I'm starting to be convinced that I don't know if he's quite ready to get as much time as he's getting. Bring him in as like a spot guy, but give him a whole drive might lead to bad things. I'm not sure though.
The thing is that when Robinson came in, he was effective, and he was effective just as a runner, basically. Mm-hmm. But then when you get in like a 3rd and 8 or a 3rd and 9 or something, you got to take him off.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to put Force A back on the field when there's a 3rd and long situation. And that 3rd and long situation was not really Robinson's fault, right? Because, they get in what I think it was, 2nd and 4 after a 6-yard run. And then they pick up a penalty, and then he hits Koger for 30 freaking yards and he drops the ball. So, as long as Denard Robinson is a running threat, and a running threat first and foremost, I think he can function as a quarterback, even against good teams. He drove right down the field against Iowa.
Yeah, and it's despite when he comes into the game, teams really load up against him, and he still manages, it seems, to get, 3 or 4 yards no matter what. So, if he can run, he can run.
He's remarkably effective for just being a one-trick pony like he is, but you got to take him out on 3rd and long.
Mm-hmm.
2nd and long, too, against Michigan State. Again, that was not necessarily Denard Robinson's fault that they ended up in 2nd and long. But once you end up in 2nd and long, 3rd and long, he's just not a quarterback that you can live with.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for the most part, I'm fine with the way he's being used. I would actually like to see him use a little bit more, bring him in on occasional plays, 1st and 10, 2nd and short kind of things during the rest of the game. You have got situational quarterbacks now. You've got a running quarterback and you've got a passing quarterback, and on passing downs, the passing quarterback should be in.
Yeah.
That's my main Rodriguez beef.
Yeah. Speaking of Rodriguez beef, one thing that really bothered me, I guess at the time it seemed like a bigger deal than it actually turned out to be, but the clock management at the end of the first half where he spikes it on 3rd down with 14 seconds left and then they kick the field goal on 4th. You have plenty of time to go for a shot at the end zone there.
That bugged me.
And as smart football would say, spiking the football, if you have a package installed, this is the play we're going to, especially on that play, they had time to look to the sidelines and get there post-defensive lineman read.
Exactly. It's just if you're running the ball in that situation, you need to have a second play called, a backup pass play that you can call immediately upon getting the line, and they did not have that.
And even the way it turned out, there was plenty of time to call a play, regardless of whether
there
or
was
not.
Plenty of time to call a play and get it off. There might not have been plenty of time to call a play, get it off, and then have a field goal attempt afterwards.
If you make sure you throw the ball into the end zone, though, that's not
but
a huge issue.
You get to the line with 13 seconds left, and how long is calling a play going to take?
Yeah.
Because you got to communicate to everybody. You got to get it in from the sideline. I think that's dodgy. I think what you really need to do is you really just need to have
something ready.
Yeah, just throw a fade, man.
Yeah.
That's
kind of what my point was. Is just have a play that says, okay, we're going to gain, 20 yards to get into the end zone. If we don't get into the end zone, we can kick the field goal still. We gave ourselves a chance to get the
7
points.
It wasn't 20 yards. It was 8 yards.
The
clock management on that drive was a little bit strange because, they have no timeouts and they're running the ball with under a minute left, and it worked. I mean, they were really gashing them right then. But I think once you get inside the 10 and you get down to like the two or the three, you really need to make the second play call there a pass just to either get a touchdown or get a play stoppage so you can, you know, get yourself settled. Yeah. Running is pretty tough because
Passing, you can determine whether you gain 10 yards or 0 yards.
Right, yeah.
Running, you might end up getting 2 yards.
From the 3-yard line, the game clock is stopping after that play either way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I thought that was, you know, a pretty effective drive, and I thought that there was definitely a problem with the way that ended up. And you can't really blame necessarily Rodriguez when that's a freshman quarterback running out there, I think.
That's fair. And a lot of people are kind of after Rodriguez's throat after this Penn State game. And then I kind of think, like, hey, you have to understand, like, Penn State is a really good football team. Rodriguez is in his second year with freshman quarterbacks. Yeah. Like, there's only so much blame that can go on one guy.
That was just like that. The whole game was like the second half is just this haze to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I
think it's actually called sleet.
The only things that I remember are Michigan fumbling, Michigan dropping passes, and the worst drive in the history of Michigan football, which is that's probably a slight exaggeration, but the one that ended up in the safety.
But only slight.
Yeah, but that was like a game where everything that could possibly have gone wrong went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And like just, I don't know if that's poor planning or poor preparation. My natural inclination is that that's always just bad luck.
Yeah, maybe not always bad luck. Like,
yeah.
If it was bad luck, Illinois would have won like 2 or 3 games this year. But
sure.
Yeah, there is something to be said for occasionally you're going to have a game where things just don't fall your way, and you know what? That's life.
And the thing is that Michigan would get stupid penalties on big gains. So, like, there was Carlos Brown had a run that went out to about the 50 or something, and that came back because of an illegal formation.
Yeah.
And there was another long...
There have been a lot of illegal formation penalties this year, actually. There are several against, was it Eastern? Or maybe Indiana?
Not something that really jumps out at me.
Really?
It's something that's happened a lot.
Hmm. It happened a lot in one particular game, and then there were a couple, maybe there weren't many of them, but, like, key ones times.
And then Schilling got a holding call on a long pass completion.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing if, you know, you get a holding call on an incompletion, but it's a lot more damaging when the alternative is like a 20-yard gain. And that just happened to Michigan all game. And I don't think that they beat Penn State if they play, unless they play like their A-plus game and Penn State doesn't have a good game at all. But that was a really, really bad game just from the standpoint of what they can do and what they actually did do. They just like they were shooting themselves in the foot every 10 seconds, and it was I remember a Michigan game from it was a long time ago. It was probably in high school at the time, and I think James Whitley was returning punts, and in that game it was a little bit rainy, but I remember Michigan fumbled something like 11 times.
Wow.
And I think they still won that game, but by the end of that game I was just incredibly frustrated, and you were probably 8.
I was probably an Ohio State fan, by which I mean I was not a college football fan. But
so, like, in that game reminded me of that game where it's just one of those days that happens every 10 years or something where it's just
hope that it doesn't happen
with
regularity. And it hasn't happened too much.
I think the Iowa game counts.
Yeah.
Like I mean,
so then is it becoming a pattern? Is the team starting to forget how to hold on to the damn ball? As you would say.
I don't know. It's like I think that you're seeing a natural progression. Like the comparison that everyone was making last year was to the Notre Dame team from a year before, and Notre Dame got better the year after, but they didn't get particularly good.
Is that kind of the trajectory we're seeing here?
Yeah,
probably?
I think. I mean, Michigan's going to go 8-5, maybe 7-6. And and Notre Dame went 7-6 after a bowl win over a terrible Hawaii team. And, you know, I think Michigan was a little bit ahead of where Notre Dame was last year. Because just by looking at the numbers, they were 50 yards a game better than that terrible Notre Dame team.
And you wrote an entire post comparing the two. And the verdict was Michigan 2008, not quite as bad as Notre Dame.
Not quite as terrible as Notre Dame 2007. So, you know, I think that Michigan will do well to match sort of the trajectory of Notre Dame, and they should be a little bit better because they were a little bit better last year, but then again, they don't have a returning quarterback, so a lot of Notre Dame's improvement from year one to year two was getting Clawson back for a second year. Michigan doesn't have that luxury, and we'll have it next year. But
So does that mean that Michigan might be even a little further ahead in the grand scheme of things in terms of Notre Dame's improvement was partially based on having a quarterback back, and Michigan is improving despite having a first-year quarterback, or is it just kind of taking it too far?
Yeah, I think so. I think it should be, especially because, you know, they've got a first-year coordinator, and next year they'll finally have a second-year coordinator. So
for the first time in seemingly forever.
Yeah, so there's a lot of argument there that, you know, Michigan should improve more than you would expect an average team returning the number of starters that they will have. The other thing is, I don't know how good Notre Dame is this year. They're a really weird team.
Yeah.
Like, every single one of their games goes down to, like, the last possession.
Yeah, I think their total margin on the year has got to be, like, other than that Nevada game, has got to be pretty close to, like, 15 points one way or the other,
yeah.
Probably.
So, I mean, they should have lost to Washington.
Yeah. They should have lost to State probably as well. Or at least gone to overtime with State.
Well, they should have lost to Washington because Washington
got screwed
on the calls. They could have lost to Purdue. They did lose to USC, and I mean that Boston College game. I turned it on after I got back, and I was their quarterback threw a interception as bad as the Cousins interception, possibly worse because he did not have a guy as in his face. It was, you know, directly to a linebacker. It was just horrible. But so that's such a weird team.
Yeah.
You'd think that they should be very good because, I mean, they've got Clawson and they've got all those receivers, but they've been sort of an Ohio State 2002 sort of team where every game goes on the last second.
And aside from that Nevada win, they have six total games decided by 28 total points, two of them losses by 7 points to the Trojans and by 4 points to a team you may have heard of that resides in Ann Arbor, Michigan, the Wolverines. And the other ones, a 3-point win over State, a 3-point win over Purdue, a 7-point overtime win over Washington, and then this past weekend, a 4-point win over Boston College. So they're kind of winning everything by the skin of their teeth if they're winning.
Yeah. Losing everything by the skin of their teeth. Although the USC one being down a touchdown. Yeah.
It's kind of it looked a little closer than the score was, except then you have to the game was played more in favor of the Trojans and then Notre Dame made the furious comeback
That driving to tie is a lot different than driving to win.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's our opinion of Notre Dame for no reason whatsoever. Sure. I'll talk about a couple things I saw in the Penn State game that I thought were interesting. Crazy thing about Kovacs is he's a walk-on. He's a redshirt freshman walk-on, and he's a redshirt freshman walk-on who didn't make the team last year because he had the knee injury.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
So this is like the first year he's played football in college.
Wow.
So he's not even, you know, a true redshirt freshman. He's basically a true freshman walk-on safety who's starting at Michigan. Like that. I mean, there are no juniors, and Stevie Brown would be hypothetically a safety, but they moved him to linebacker because they needed him at linebacker because Michigan's recruiting at linebacker was pretty much terrible.
Also bad.
So
the defensive recruiting, basically, I think the theme we can get going here. So the defensive recruiting towards the end of the Carr era was pretty bad.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could see that they did okay on the defensive line.
Yeah.
You know, they brought in Martin and they brought in Van Bergen, and those guys were both well-regarded recruits. Of course, they've got, you know, Brandon Graham, but even that, there's not a whole lot of depth. There's the Canadian guy, and then there's Banks, and that's it.
Yeah.
And, like, Patterson was a huge recruit and just never developed at all. And a lot of people were saying that Carr got kind of lazy towards
complacent,
the end. And just used the summer camp and stuff to do most of his recruiting. And I think we're seeing that bear terrible, awful fruit. And, you know, I don't want to exonerate Rodriguez entirely, but if
the blame can be spread among multiple people, and Carr is one of the people to whom the blame can be attributed.
You could split the blame between Rodriguez and Carr for the quarterback situation, because Carr did recruit a quarterback. It's just, or maybe there's nobody to blame for that. But the striking thing about the safety situation is that nobody has even transferred.
Yeah. There just weren't any to begin with.
Right. And, I mean, they moved a couple of them to linebacker. They moved Smith to linebacker, and that's fine. That happens. But you have to be prepared for that contingency, and they just absolutely were not.
Mm-hmm. So that's where Michigan needs to recruit this year, obviously.
So, and then the other thing that I thought was pretty interesting is that late in the game, they started pulling Eze off the field for Fitzgerald.
Yeah. I noticed that Fitzgerald was getting much more playing time, and Eze, personally responsible, I think, for the big Corliss touchdown. He's in man coverage and just I saw that play, and he can't be solely blamed, but I saw that play and I was like, oh, they're going to Corliss because Obiezeh can't cover him at all.
You can't leave that guy in single coverage with Obi Eze without safety help over the top and not expect to get hosed. I mean, Eze just doesn't have the athletic, like. And then they did a similar thing where they motioned Royce out into the slot and Eze followed him. I'm just like,
you probably can't cover him very well.
No, guy. I mean, I'm not sure why they didn't send Mouton out. And they actually, after that, those couple of plays, they switched the assignment and Mouton started motioning out. Because, like, I mean, I don't want to offend the kid who everybody says is great and is apparently graduating with an A-, B-plus grade at Point Average in sociology this fall. But
well, that's a fun little personal tidbit there.
So somebody knows his mom and sent me that. So he's a great guy. He's just, you know, not a real good football player, I guess. Yeah. So I watched Eze when he came off the field, and every time he came off the field, like, Hobson was being like, you're doing this wrong, you're doing this wrong, you're doing this wrong. And Eze was like, I don't. Yeah. So, I mean, that'll be interesting to see if he loses his job towards the end of the year. Yeah. I mean, I thought he was getting a bit better. He was pretty good against Iowa, but you put him in space and...
Yeah. But also against Iowa, he was more of a blitzer than a, hey, cover the tight end guy, as we have learned that nobody was the, hey, cover the tight end guy. Yeah. So, I think blitzing plays a heck of a lot more to Eze's strengths than trying to drop back into coverage.
The only thing is, I remember thinking this on the third down. It was like 3rd and 9 or something from the 12 or something, or maybe it was 3rd and goal from the 9, and Michigan sends 7 guys, and, you know, Penn State just throws a corner out into the end zone, you know, with some, I think it was probably Kovacs or something, and, like,
I believe most of the Penn State touchdowns that were scored were Graham Zug being covered by Stevie Brown, if that's...
Well, and it's just, like, at some point you've got to, I mean, that's not necessarily Brown's fault, because he's lined up inside of the guy, and he's running a corner route to the end zone, and Clark can throw it, and I think Michigan, like,
And also, you have your linebacker on a wide receiver.
Yeah, well, I like it when Michigan blitzes, but I think that the abandoned ship sort of 7-man blitz
all or nothing
that we've seen a lot from Robinson of late is too predictable. Like, if you do that once a game or something, that's something that can be effective. But they started doing it against Notre Dame, and it was effective, and they started doing it against Michigan State, and it was effective. And then when they did it against Iowa, Iowa had a play designed to kill it.
I was ready for it.
Yeah.
And part of that might be the first-year coordinator thing. Michigan can throw rock, and then the opponent just eventually is just like, hey, we'll try paper here.
Yeah, apparently, you know, Darrell Clark said after the game that they weren't disguising their coverages at all, and I'm like, well, yeah, that's tough to do when you've got 2 cornerbacks and you can't go to a nickel package and you know, you're motioning guys out.
There are various kind of systemic factors that are preventing Michigan from doing a lot of what they want to do, basically, be it personnel, be it years in a system, maybe that they hopefully within a couple of years you can see some of those issues get ironed out pretty seriously.
I don't know. It's tough. I have a hard time seeing Michigan having a Big Ten championship caliber defense for a while.
I agree with you, but you would hope at least that those factors are kind of decreased slowly.
Yeah.
If not quickly,
like,
I guess.
Next year's team looks like a 9-3 team to me. Like, not.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I mean, and I don't think that the year after that they're going to be that great. Like, I mean, maybe, but I don't see.
I think a lot of people are expecting the 2011 season to be a pretty special one in Ann Arbor, and it depends on if you see, if the 2010 recruiting class finishes with a couple defensive key players, which I don't think you're going to see, other than maybe Cullen Christian, who I think scout thinks is a 5-star. Other than that, I don't
Christian,
think you're going to see a ton of impact players.
Christian's consensus top 100, and then Tony Grimes is actually almost top 100 to scout and rivals likes him a lot. So I think, you know, in the secondary, you're going to have some guys who are going to be big recruits. So maybe as true sophomores, someone will step forward. But
and I guess at that time, you have to figure Justin Turner, if he is the 5-star that we all we saw he was coming out of high school to the sites, if he can do something special in his redshirt sophomore season.
All right, so that was the Penn State game, which was not very good.
No.
At all, but, you know, we will live. So let's bring in Jamie Mack. We'll talk about the Big Ten, and as part of that, we will talk about the Illinois game. So we are bringing in Jamie Mack from Just Cover, which is at justcoverblog.com, to do our usual thing and talk about the Big Ten. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, Brian. How are you guys doing today?
Not too bad.
I'm considering
the circumstances.
Yeah. No, I'm mopey. Straight up.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
All right.
We'll get to Michigan later.
So let's run down the schedule. New Mexico State versus Ohio State. 1-3 WAC team versus Ohio State.
Yeah, the Michael Loxley show makes an appearance in Columbus.
That will be interesting. No, it won't.
No, it won't be. No.
All right, so
Ohio State big, I'm guessing.
Yeah, Ohio State big, I think, is our pick for this barn burner. Another barn burner coming up. Number 6, Iowa versus Indiana.
Well, you know, Indiana actually has some recent success against Iowa. They beat them in 06 and 07, part of the lull years that Ferentz had at Iowa, arguably the low points of that lull. But last year, you know, Iowa kind of got their mojo back a little bit, and they smoked Indiana, and I think it'll probably be about the same this Saturday. It's in Iowa City. The Hawkeyes will probably be double-digit favorites, but they've done pretty well under Ferentz covering big numbers. Some of my college football cronies from back in the day, we used to call him the Steve Spurrier of the Big Ten, because those first few years, like in the Brad Banks era and whatnot, they used to cover 3-touchdown spreads like it was their job. And I don't know where Indiana's mind is going to be. You know, they blew a game last week, and I think that it's going to be hard for them to recover. So I think Iowa big in this game, 3 or 4 touchdowns at least.
And that's kind of odd to me, I guess, not being a bettor myself, thinking, because, you know, Kirk Ferentz kind of has this reputation as a Lloyd Carr-esque character, and Lloyd was so hesitant to run up the score at all.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, just an odd thing to think about.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't think they were, he was doing it Steve Spurrier style, that's for sure. You know, a lot of Albert Young, 150-yard game, 3 touchdown days in that stretch, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
But, yeah, I just think Indiana, I've seen this routine. The Hoosiers always have this game in the Big Ten where they have it, and then they kind of choke it away, and then they just can't get back on track after that. And Iowa's just rolling, you know, and they're just going to keep the train rolling at least until Columbus, and then that'll be certainly one of the games of the year, at least in our neck of the woods.
Absolutely. I mean, that could be Iowa's bid for a national championship game.
Yeah.
Shocking.
Yeah.
So
that could be very exciting to watch.
And, you know, if Iowa gets in against, like, an Alabama or something, that could be a game, I think. I mean,
yeah. It kind of takes the right type of team for Iowa to play, I think, in a national championship game.
Yeah.
Because you think of, like, you know, some of the stronger teams. Sorry, this is kind of going on a tangent, but I think in 2006, if Michigan had beaten Ohio State and played Florida, they would have had a much better chance against Florida than Ohio State ended up having, and I think Ohio State would have had a better chance against USC. It's kind of just that the matchups would have worked better, but that's neither here nor there. So
matchups are important. I don't think they have the talent or the star power or statistical dominance of these teams, but this year's Iowa club is really starting to give me a 1997 Michigan and 2002 Ohio State feel. You know, they just go out and they play you tooth and nail. They don't give a rip what the final score is going to be. They know that they will have more points than you. And, you know, that's what kind of that mentality paved the way for those teams. I don't know if Iowa has that extra gear that those teams could have nationally, but, you know, we'll see if that happens. And, you know, Iowa's got such poor success in BCS-type bowls. You know, they got blown out the 3 times that Fry took them to the Rose Bowl. The Orange Bowl a few years ago was an unmitigated disaster. So, I mean, you know, we'll see. But, you know, here locally, I'm with them. I think they're going to run the table, personally, at this point.
Wow.
With a win in Columbus, I think that's this week?
At this point, I mean, I've been touting them all along, and I just I like the way they play. Now, you know, we'll see what Ohio State does in the next few weeks. I'm still kind of going on the fact that I think Iowa can make Terrell Pryor look bad. But, you know, we'll see if the kid progresses the next few weeks like he did yesterday, and maybe I'll be less confident about the Hawkeyes going into Columbus.
Wait, did he? Like, all I saw was the first half, and in that first half, Pryor didn't look all that great. Like, he had the long touchdown pass to Posey, but that was, like, just a huge coverage bust by Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Where,
yeah, it was kind of a wide open.
Yeah, well, he underthrew the guy, but it was, I mean, the guy was open by 20 yards, so he should have underthrown him. But, like, that does not scream renaissance to me. That screams huge coverage bust by Minnesota.
There you go. Well, the box score looked very pretty, but when you broke it down a bit more, you see that they really didn't get anything going in the first half but that big play.
Yeah. Well, they had
I don't know. I just don't see a reason to get off Iowa, and I'm just trying to keep doors open because, you know, when you get focused so much on a certain outcome happening, you get the carpet pulled out from underneath your feet, case in point yesterday afternoon. So you cut me some slack and let me at least have a little out on Iowa, you know. But I really like them. I can't see a Big Ten team matching up and playing anything less than their best game and beating Iowa. I really can't. I mean, you know, because Michigan State didn't play that poorly yesterday, you know, but they still couldn't get it done.
All right. So Iowa big over Indiana. Now moving on to Penn State at Northwestern. Northwestern, of course, escaped with the win over Indiana. And Penn State, what would you say, nuclear-aided?
Bombed.
Yeah, they kind of bombed Michigan.
Yeah, they systematically picked Michigan apart yesterday. And as far as from a Penn State standpoint, that makes me a whole heck of a lot more bullish on the Nittany Lions than I was before. I think this is going to be another blowout on our hands, frankly, in the Big Ten this weekend. You know, I think one of the storylines that the we Michigan boosters may have overlooked in our possible optimism about the game was what the defense with Bowman and Lee might look like if they were playing together. And now, were they playing a lot together yesterday?
I thought Hull, actually. I haven't checked, but Hull got most of the game, I thought. But, I wasn't that impressed with the Penn State defense. I thought they were good, but I thought that Michigan just killed itself with drop passes and terrible decisions, and they got a lot of pressure. I think that they're a good defense.
I will say that the game changed my opinion of Penn State more than it changed my opinion of Michigan, for what it's worth. But I do think Penn State's defense is good, but not like anything special.
I don't know. They appear to be playing a lot more physical out there than Michigan, and
ran the ball pretty well. Michigan did, but stuff got called back on penalties, and then, you know, they just couldn't. Like, there were a lot of instances where Michigan, I kept looking up at the scoreboard, and I couldn't believe that Michigan had that few rushing yards. It just seemed very strange to me, given the way the game was playing out. So,
yeah, I spent at least the first 2.5 to 3 quarters still optimistic because of the rushing yard stat. I have this thing about underdogs. You know, if they outrush their opponent, they usually cover, and, you know, the number wasn't that big yesterday, so I kept looking up there going, wow, Michigan's got more rushing yards. All right, keep plugging away. And it never really materialized.
Yeah, but they also had, like, 40 passing yards at halftime. Anyway,
this
is not about Penn State or Northwestern.
You know, I just think that the Lions' defense is just going to eat up Northwestern. You know, I think that I've caught more Penn State action the last 2 weeks than I did the first part of the season, and I just like what I see, and I don't think Northwestern's going to bring anything to the table, you know, more than Michigan or Minnesota could. So I think it's just going to be another systematic taking apart of an opponent. And I don't know what the line's going to be, but I could see this being another 20-point victory for Penn State.
Yeah, I could easily agree with that. I think Northwestern, as unimpressive as their record is, I think they're something like 5-3. I don't even necessarily think they've impressed me that much. Probably should have lost to Indiana, I think. And then that loss to Syracuse is kind of awful.
Yeah.
Wow. When you think about it. So.
Absolutely.
Kafka's putting up good numbers, but holy moly, I mean, he's boom or bust. He turns the ball over a lot. Yesterday wasn't that stirring of a comeback against Indiana. You know, they had cut the margin to a reasonable deficit by halftime, but he threw like 3 second-half picks. So, I mean, yeah, he just turns it over too much. I just can't see that stopping against Penn State, and it's just going to open up the floodgates, I think, eventually in that game.
Okay.
All right, we'll move along.
Michigan State at Minnesota. Michigan State, of course, coming off the last-second loss to Iowa. Minnesota coming off back-to-back blowouts at the hands of Penn State and Ohio State. It's in Minnesota, but Minnesota seems pretty freaking terrible.
Yeah, they sure do. Obviously, the opponent upgrade, you know, is obvious, but they look so bad. It'll be interesting to see how Michigan State responds, though, as well. Sometimes it's good to get on the road, I think, after a heartbreaker like that. I have no empirical evidence, though, to back that up. I know how much you guys like that, but I'm just going to lean with Michigan State in this one. I think they bring more to the game. I think the difference in talent on the teams is pretty obvious, and I think also Michigan State's just playing better football. It's a primetime game next week.
Yeah, it's a primetime game.
The Big Ten primetime. Michigan State seems to be monopolizing that time slot past couple weeks, at least.
And, you know, of course, this is kind of weird because this will be up on the blog probably later in the week, but I have no idea about this, but didn't Decker get hurt yesterday?
He had an ankle thing I think he came back at some point, but he was less effective afterwards, I think.
That's all they've got is that connection there.
Yeah, he hobbled off the field in the first quarter and didn't return due to a recurring ankle injury.
Yeah. So I'm leaning. I'm taking Michigan State in this one to win the game. At times, Minnesota's kind of flirted with being okay, but I think in the end, they're really one of the bottom two or three teams in the league. And Michigan State, I don't know what you guys felt about their effort last night, but one thing that I'm left with is the fact that they have four losses, and their opponent's record in those four losses are 25-5. And back in the late 80s, when they were really rocking and rolling there, the late 80s and the early 90s, man, that was pretty much what they did. They always had like 3-5 losses on their record, but they always lost to the top teams like Notre Dame, and they brought Miami of Florida in. And I still think this is a good team, and though I think they're going to be very impressive, I think, the final month of the year, and I think it starts with a win on Saturday against Minnesota.
So that's Michigan State at Minnesota. The last game of the week before the Michigan matchup is Purdue at Wisconsin. Slightly interesting for Purdue's last 2 weeks, maybe.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, it'll be interesting. I don't think they're going to have enough to get to a bowl because they cornered themselves so much. But if they can pull this win off, they might be able to get to the postseason. But certainly, you have to say that they could. They're probably the most improved team in the Big Ten right now, wouldn't you say? Not just from last year to this year, but maybe also just during the course of this year.
I don't know. They're playing with some pretty tough teams, Oregon and Notre Dame. They gave pretty good games despite not coming away with a victory in either of them. But they are looking obviously better in the last two games where they actually won than they were in the previous five.
Yeah, it's just kind of good to see teams emerge sometimes.
It's probably better to not happen right before Michigan plays them. But
well, the thing is that it's striking me as I'm looking at the entire Big Ten right now, and it's just, again, that like Michigan is always missing terrible teams.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about this last week, saying, oh, yeah, Michigan's going to play Illinois. They're not going to miss the worst team in the Big Ten. But I think
they're probably missing 9 and 10.
Yeah, they're probably missing 9 and 10. They're missing two of the worst teams, if nothing else, in Northwestern and Minnesota.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, 7 through 10 is Indiana, Northwestern, Minnesota, so put those guys in whatever order you want.
Definitely. I mean, there's two drop-offs in the league between the top teams that are competing for the top spot and then the middle ground and then the bottom ones, and Michigan misses half the bottom ones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's the maximum you can miss. So, I mean, you know, I think, yeah, debating the merits of having Indiana and Illinois and not having Minnesota and Northwestern is kind of semantics. You know, I mean, I think, you know, in all four places, I think Michigan has decent will have a decent crowd, you know, if they went to, you know, each one. You know what I mean? It's like not any of those places are like hard home field advantages that Michigan would have to overcome. So it's about even.
Yeah, I think when Michigan.
But the point is they missed the max. So yeah. You know, who else does that?
Purdue at Wisconsin.
Yeah, talk about stalling to make a pick on this game. You know what? Wisconsin has been a tough team for me to figure out this year from a prognosticating standpoint. I love the way Purdue is playing, so I would consider Purdue a pretty solid pick as an underdog. I think they're probably going to get maybe a touchdown in this game. I take them with the head start. They've been fun to watch this year. You know, I find myself not being interested in the Purdue games when the game starts and then always having my eyeballs on it when it ends. You know, Tim referenced the Oregon and Notre Dame games. Those are some examples. So I think it's going to be a close game. If the weather's okay, I think it could be high scoring because I still do like the offense on Wisconsin. They're coming off a bye. They should be raring to go as well. But how about a Wisconsin win and a Purdue cover at this point? Does that equal a pick?
That is a pick. All right.
All right.
So, and the game of the week from this podcast perspective, Michigan at Illinois.
Yes, that's the game of the week from my perspective too. I mean, this is obviously a pretty big game for Michigan. They all are when you're trying to build something. I'll just mention this because I did mention it a couple of weeks ago, and it's worth mentioning again. That in the summer, when they released lines for certain games, Illinois was favored by 7. And slowly but surely, as Illinois, you know, looked awful, you know, and Michigan looked improved, the line completely did a 180 and was Michigan minus 7. Now, they haven't updated any lines, and they've pulled them off the board probably until tomorrow. Since the game is this week, it'll be later today, and we'll know by the time the podcast is up. Obviously, the listeners will. So it'll be interesting to see what the spread is after what happened yesterday, but I don't know about Michigan actually covering a point spread on the road, but I love their chances in this game. I think that a lot of the ills that we saw are going to get taken care of, at least offensively. You know, I think they're going to score a lot of points. I think we're going to see, you know, a 30-point effort.
Illinois is just like, you just run at them eventually, and then somebody screws up, and you get in like a huge long touchdown. So
They're awful at defending against the run. Well, particularly defending against the run, which is what kind of, I think,
Give me a number.
You can easily say it's Michigan's forte. They're number 101 in the nation. They are 11th in the conference at defending the run. 185 yards a game they give up. Michigan is still first in the conference in rushing, despite a slightly subpar performance against the Nittany Lions.
Slightly subpar performance?
219 yards against all opponents to date.
So, I mean, that's the thing that gives me confidence about the Illinois game, is that it shouldn't really come down to the performance of the quarterbacks, because it's just they should be able to run, and then, you know, get something from the quarterbacks every here and there, and that still results in 30-plus points. And I know what Juice Williams did to Michigan last year, but I can't see that happening after seven games where Illinois has just been completely terrible on offense the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think that there'll be some big plays. I think this game is going to look a lot like the Purdue game last year as far as the number of points that could get scored. But I think that Illinois isn't as good as Purdue coming into that game, and Michigan obviously is better. I think that it's taken two elite defenses to finally get this team into the turnover identity it had last year. You know, Illinois does not bring that to the table. But I do think they're going to get some points because, you know, I mean, Michigan's defense is through eight games, it's going to have its breakdown. But I think that they struggled to find an offensive identity against Penn State, and I think they find it against Illinois kind of the old-fashioned way by running the football a lot. I mean, you guys laid out the statistics. Everybody knows those statistics going into the game. And I think that a lot of the running backs. I think the freshman quarterbacks, though, have hit a little bit of a wall this year. You know, it's such a mental and physical step up from high school, and so much has been put on them. Kind of felt yesterday that they had just sort of hit a wall. So I think that Rodriguez has to almost put the game in Minor and Brown's hand over this weekend. And I think they can tear it up.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them losing the game. I could see them doing what they've done against Iowa and Penn State by just imploding. But yeah. I think it'll be a hard task to out-implode Illinois.
Yeah, that's one thing I was going to say. Michigan, until the Iowa, even Delaware State, they were -1. And then the Penn State games, they're a pretty good team in terms of turnover margin.
Yeah.
But they're last in the
conference
now.
Those games count.
Exactly. They're last in the conference now, but Illinois is not that far ahead of them, if anything. It'll be hopefully an evenly matched, at least in terms of winning the turnover battle thing.
Yeah, and you always have to look really deeper into the numbers when you look at box scores. You know, the turnover margin. I mean, like I said earlier, it's, you know, Iowa and Penn State are top end defenses in the nation, and that's what it took.
That's not Illinois.
To rattle this offense back into kind of last year's MO. Mm-hmm. And Illinois, I don't think that'll happen against Illinois. And just to clarify, when I said it's going to look like last year's Purdue game, I mean, I really think Michigan's going to go out on the road and put up a lot of points. Illinois is going to counter with some big plays. You know, didn't it take a fumbled punt by Odoms last year to sort of get Purdue back in that game? And I don't think that's going to happen in this, because I think other than against Iowa and Penn State, the two top-end defenses, they've been secure with the ball.
No offense, but I don't think so. I mean, they have not been secure with the ball, and that's extended to Minor and Brown and Greg Matthews. I mean, fumbling a punt is not something that depends on if you're playing Penn State or Illinois, right?
I also think the Minor fumble against Iowa. I mean, I think the Iowa kid made a play by reaching in there and pulling it out. Iowa is coached to do that. I mean, I'm going to stress the word coached. You know, we're going up against Illinois. I mean, I don't know if they're going to have they got a playmaker who can make that play.
Yeah, and I think part of it is.
But I agree with you. Minor was also pretty lazy with the ball there. I mean, you know, so it kind of add. You know, the two things sort of added up. I see your point. They really, if you look at it, weren't secure. Their defense has been a big play defense, and that's kind of made the turnover margin look a little on the even side in those other games.
Yeah, there's something to be said for turnovers being forced by the defense. They're mostly on the offensive player, at least in terms of fumbles, but. Mm-hmm. You didn't see Michigan fumble it a lot against bad defenses, one of which Illinois unquestionably is. So hopefully, from the Michigan fans' perspective, that will be kind of a little better than facing, you know, two of the best defenses in certainly the conference and probably the nation in Penn State and Iowa.
I just think it's going to be in their hands, the running back. And I really have, you know, I have faith that they can get it done against a team like Illinois, that's for sure. And I just think they're playing a team on Saturday that's a total mess, and people are going to try to paint Michigan as a mess after Saturday, you know, but I think they're a little bit more of a cohesive unit than that.
Well, there's messes, and then there's messes, like
yeah, exactly,
Illinois
and I'm not talking
Michigan
about anything on the blog. I'm just talking about people griping and talk radio and all that. And,
I mean.
You know, I just think that, I mean, you know, we all know it's more of a cohesive unit than we saw yesterday, and they'll rally. on Saturday.
All right, so that's a pick for a Michigan victory, and that concludes the Big Ten with Jamie Mack. We will see you next week.
All right, Matt.
This has been the MGO Podcast version 1.10, a good version number, a bad decimal number. We talked about the Penn State game with me and Brian, and we talked to Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com about the Big Ten weekend to come, including Michigan's game against Illinois. Thank you for downloading us, and we'll see you again next week.